the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds have been chipping away at our welfare state, at the mixed economy, and now we've got this war raging with in Ukraine with the Russians, which isn't really anything to do with Ukraine. It's two different systems fighting. It's a mixed economy system where the government owns and controls the infrastructure and runs it pretty much at cost for the public. Okay, so there are a few exceptions to that, but basically it's infrastructure government. You know, the government makes sure the railways run, the water runs. And in the West now, we've just got rampant finance capitalism where the political parties, the press, the infrastructure is all being up for sale and to the highest bidder, and sometimes actually sold off at a loss and through all sorts of insider deals and dodgy fraud.
Welcome to the Fair Food Forager and Friends Show, a podcast where we mostly talk about the environment and our health and how they interact with each other, but also some things that you won't hear in the mainstream media. So let's investigate what else is happening, let's hear some alternate views, and let's make up our own minds.
Fair Food Forager.
Changing the way the world eats
by making ethical easy.
That sounds like a very good idea.
Fair Food Forager.
Another episode of the Fair Food Forager and Friends Show, the podcast brought to you by the Fair Food Forager app, the world's only ethical social media and sustainable food directory. So you can use this food directory when you're on the road to find ethical and sustainable food. Cafes, restaurants, farmers markets, bulk food stores who are reducing the impact on the planet by reducing waste, food waste, plastic waste, sourcing locally, finding organics, anything like that. And you can also share posts, recipes, food that you're growing, your appreciation of nature, your bushwalk, your beach cleaner, anything that helps each other and the planet. On today's podcast, I'm once again talking to Tony Gosling, and I'm interrupting the little series I have with Michael Wallach on the viral delusion to talk to Tony live from the Bilderberg Conference in Portugal for 2023. And as you remember, Tony is a massive wealth of knowledge, remembers all the names and history of these type of elite groups who have basically formed to control the world. And Tony talks about some of the people that might be attending, some of the things that come from past Bilderberg meetings, and what they may have on the agenda for this week's power discussion on how they control our lives, that include war, sending all of us broke, and which politicians they will install in government next. So I encourage you to check out his website, bilderberg.org, to get more of the story and get some of his books as well. So without further ado, here is Tony Gosling. Tony Gosling, welcome again to the Fair Food Forager and Friends Show. How are you?
All right, very well, thank you, Paul. So, we're getting together just before this 2023 Bilderberg Conference over in Lisbon. I think the Portuguese journalists have done a fantastic job this year in literally sniffing them down, hunting them down. So we've got quite a good knowing a lot about the security several days before it convenes this week on the 17th of May 2023. And it's going to be a lot of security at the hotel, several road closures, So just, you know, that's the sort of basics in Lisbon. And I would just encourage anybody, if they hear this, to just get over to Lisbon, you know, because this is where the world's fate about decided. So maybe, you know, you can ask me about that. But these are, you know, I think what we've got to do to understand what the significance of this meeting is, go back to Washington last year. I mean, obviously, you can go right the way back and look at all the history of the Bilderberg, including the enormous amount of evidence of this being really essentially a Nazi project in collaboration with the Allies at the end of the war. So, you know, there was all this, all these kind of statements at the end of World War II, General Patton coming out quite openly and saying, you know, let's just go and attack Russia, the Soviet Union, as it was at the time. Let's just plow onto Moscow. Then he had a nasty little car crash. We also have Winston Churchill trying to get onto any live program on the BBC in the late 1940s, saying how important it was to use these newfound nuclear weapons to obliterate Moscow. And having to be kept off any live programs on the BBC as a result, as he was, of course, before he became famous and before he became Prime Minister, the 1930s, Churchill, although he was making a lot of fuss about Adolf Hitler, was kept well away from the microphones until appeasement was over, until he became Prime Minister in 1940. So, you know, a lot of connection with the Nazis, a connection with Russophobia. Last year, they put the Ukraine issue at the bottom of the agenda in a rather cheeky fashion. Of course, it's the top agenda. It's the most important item that the Bilderbergers are in, because, as we know about their involvement in the Iraq War, the Yugoslav breakup of the Balkanization, or the Balkans, if you want, the destruction of Yugoslavia. All these things, which are geopolitical, the Bilderbergers have been involved in one way or another. And, you know, it's, you know, if you go back through, I can remember 2002. What do you mean you're going to be attacking Iraq? What, you know, these were the leaks coming out of the conferences. And of course, the rest is history. So this is a military alliance. It's really a kind of political wing of NATO. Over the years, they have been pushing for specific people to be heads of state, prime ministers, etc. Now, I think it's impossible to become either a prime minister or a head of state in the political world in the NATO countries without the Bilderbergers' approval. So their favourite trick is to just make sure that whoever the two rival parties are, that they control both. I think it's also really interesting looking at this this weekend's Turkish elections, and it certainly looks as if Recep Tayyip Erdogan is going to be be re-elected. So that means that Turkey will be straddling the east-west divide between Russia and NATO. Whereas if the opposition had done very well, then we would have, it would have been a little bit maybe, well, not quite like the Nazi Ukraine, but it would have been more rapprochement with NATO. It's a very interesting situation that the Turks are in. And so Bilderberg, just in a nutshell, is the really the political wing of NATO. And I used to think of it as the lobby, really, but it isn't now. It's the people there are absolutely solid, and this was always the mission of Bilderberg since the 1950s, to put their people in power in Europe particularly. And it's a US-British led thing with a lot of Germans involved, a lot of ex-Nazis, bowled up at the very first Bilderberg meetings with their suits on and everything, hoping that no one would be able to trace the role that they'd had in World War II, including confiscation of Jewish wealth, the financial direction, the propaganda ministry, all the anti-Semitic and other anti-Slavic, the racist lies that went with this whole Nazi mythology promulgated by the people at the original Bilderberg conferences, which was dug out by a guy called Manfred Petrich. He ran a thing called the All Smoke and Mirrors blog, and some of his old posts are still there, but he died about a year and a bit ago. And he was one of the people we used to love meeting with at Bilderberg. So sad he's no longer around. But his German language critique was some of the best in the world of what these guys are up to. And he was absolutely clear about this being a Nazi operation, a Fourth Reich operation. And so am I. You know, in fact, I've done a book about that, which is looking at the it's called The Traitors of Arnhem, Martin Bormann and the Bilderberg Group, and looking at building on the work, really, of Paul Manning, the former CBS journalist, who the author of Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and the other author is John Ainsworth Davis, a.k.a. Christopher Crichton, the author of Op JB, who really just put together the story of what happened at the end of the war with the British Major Desmond Morton, who was head of economic warfare between the First and Second World Wars, then became, well, he was also aide-de-camp to General Haig in World War One, who was in charge of the British Army in the trenches in the First World War, in the Cousins War, between the three cousins, Kaiser Wilhelm, Tsar Nicholas, George the Fifth, that's right, of course, in England. So Desmond Morton, the private secretary to Winston Churchill, dealing directly with Martin Bormann, private secretary to Adolf Hitler, really from the middle of 1944 to the end of the war, and doing these deals to make, you know, basically for safe passage for senior, very wealthy Nazis who were basically gangsters. I mean, they didn't really have that ideology necessarily, except, you know, when it suited their purposes, like Bormann and his anti-Semitism during the war, which was, he was one of the people pushing far more for extermination of Jews. And at the end of the war, well, he didn't really care about that anymore. It was time for him to come back to the UK, and he did that with the aid of Ian Fleming. This is all written about in Op JB, the last great secret of the Second World War. And then we pass on to looking at Paul Manning's book, as I mentioned, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, where you can see him sitting over in South America, setting up these 750 companies, laundering the loot from Switzerland with the help of Bormann, obviously the signatory of the bank accounts, through Sullivan and Cromwell's law firm, the Dulles Brothers law firm in New York, and then creating a Fourth Reich, basically putting Jews in charge of many of these companies to disguise the fact that they were that it was Nazi money behind them, and that it was effectively a Nazi Fourth Reich project. So anyway, so you got it in a nutshell there. But nowadays, the key thing to understand is the link between the attack on the Nord Stream pipeline last year in 2022, which was Ball Tops 2 exercise, which began the day Bilderberg finished in Washington in 22. So, you know, don't tell me there's no good. Jake Sullivan was there, National Security Advisor to Sleepy Joe, and able to pull the woolly things over everybody's eyes. In fact, when he appears at the White House briefings, Jake Sullivan is telling everyone about how the Russians lie. Well, you know, you are lying through your teeth, mate, and you know exactly who blew up the pipeline. It wasn't the Russians. It wasn't the Russians attacking the Kremlin either. You know, it's you. And with him is... I think it's James Baker from the Office of Net Assessments, all the main people, including the CIA boss, who would be behind the Nord Stream pipeline, and in fact, who were, according to Cy Hirsch, behind it, were there at Bilderberg in Washington last year. So God knows what they're up to this year, you know, whatever fun and games they think they're going to have to try and get a Third World War started and to kill more Ukrainians in this, like, blood sacrifice that's going on. With more and more weapons being, I mean, I noticed just this week a clear announcement by the British that they are sending depleted uranium weapons to Ukraine. Well, this is no good for Ukraine because it means that the Ukrainians in the future will have intergenerational birth defects. Down the line, you know, there's some horrific birth defects that happen when you spray this ash from depleted uranium around the country, and it drifts around, it goes into the soil, it gets into the food, and you find some sort of strange half-living, non-living creature coming out instead of a newborn child from... this is the British gift to the Ukrainians, and so-called helping the Ukrainian war effort. So that's why it's important, I think, to get down to these Bilderberg conferences and just to keep an eye on the secret government, because we don't really have any form of democracy left in Europe. These guys have made sure about that. And over the years, they have been making sure that their people get put in. I think ultimately, a lot of Freemasonry involves this various ways in which, I mean, for example, the main guy that organized the 98 conference was the private secretary to the Duke of Kent, who's Grand Master of the United Grand Lodge, you know, the number one lodge in the UK, some would say the world, cousin to the Queen, as she then was, you know, great uncle now to King Charles. And the aristocracy are there, the banksters are there, the media are there, they don't write about it. And if they do, then, you know, then it will be a twisted kind of version and making some sort of joke about how people think that they rule the world. Well, they control most of the money in the Western world, these people. You've got Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, all the top people in there. People like Larry Fink, you know, he's the sort of guy that would show up. We don't know. Just one thing this year. Apparently Yuval Noah Harari is hanging around in Lisbon this weekend. Whether he's going to drop in on the Bilderberg conference, he might even be on the guest list, who knows? But it's exactly the sort of thing that would suit him. And he's the kind of person that would be invited. So there's my little sort of introduction. I don't know if you've got some questions, but I think that's, you know, it's quite clear. This is the power center in the West. It's connected in with the military. It's manipulating our politics. Sting operations to get rid of people like Boris, for example, run by these sorts of people. So now that instead of Boris, who we elected here in Britain, we've got somebody called Rishi Sunak, who he's got a kind of funny look in his eye that, you know, I don't think anyone can really trust him. He's working for the City of London. He's not working for the people who elected him. And he's been placed in that job. And we've just heard a whole succession of policies which are not working because he doesn't want them to work, because the city doesn't want them to work, because they're pushing back against this sort of anti-globalist Brexit, which was, yeah, this trying to really, I suppose, dishearten people and say, well, Brexit wasn't really possible. Habsburg, that's right, Otto von Habsburg. I think he's Otto von Habsburg. Anyway, the current head of the Habsburg aristocratic family, saying that Brexit is like watching Brexit is like watching a reality TV show, watching the Brits try to leave. And in his mind, anyway, it's impossible for them to leave, and they know it's impossible, and they can stop them leaving, however the British people vote. I mean, that was the last one I went to, was in Dresden, 2016, which is just before the Brexit vote. And actually chatting to some of the Bilderbergers when they came out and about on the Saturday, that was the one word that would send them sort of get them very annoyed. In fact, it's almost like send a shiver down them when you say the word. What do you think about Brexit? Well, we don't talk about that, you know, a bit like mentioning Princess Diana in the company of King Charles, I suppose. These are the things that they don't like thinking about. They're bits of history which they wish had never happened. And so that's their attitude. These are the people who think they own and run the world. And to a large extent, if you look at ownership of property, they, in certain respects, they do.
I have more than one question. I have 1,000 questions from that. The Portuguese media have been onto it. I think most people wouldn't even be aware that this is happening. And if, as you say, there's people like Larry Fink, are there politicians at Bilderberg as well in general?
Well, yeah, but yes. I mean, what happens is you're up and coming, you know, people that the Bilderbergers want to be the next succession of leaders. I mean, We've got, for example, Tom Tugendhat here in Britain from the Tories. We've also got David Lammy from the Labour Party, who's being sort of groomed as a leader. I think, I don't know if people saw it, but Tucker Carlson's speech to the Heritage Foundation I thought was fantastic the other week. You know, he's obviously just been sacked. Probably an out of court, part of the out of court settlement with the Dominion voting machines. And of course, they are one of the most evil companies on the planet. I'm quite happy to say that. You know, the idea of electronic elections that you can so called trust, I mean, obviously you can't. But he was talking about how in Washington, so many of the people he meets who are heads of these various Washington institutions, think tanks, political parties, et cetera, et cetera. Banks, God knows what, but anyway, they're all come across as they're fake. The people are fake. He says something about the guy from the Heritage Foundation was one of the only people he met in Washington who didn't come across like that. Now he may be buttering him up, but I know exactly what he means. I mean, we've got a whole bunch of people who've been put in that position as a leader of an organization because they're pliable and they will do as they're told. Well, those aren't leaders, are they? They're followers. But what are they following? So what they're following is the money. The money is, so that's what they want, and they're prepared to sell their souls to the devil in order to keep their money and keep their income. And they look around, they see the homeless, and they think, God, I don't want to end up like that. You know, so up until the Thatcher era in Britain, we didn't really have street homeless at all. You know, everyone was looked after one means or another. But bit by bit, these privatizers, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, have been chipping away at our welfare state, at the mixed economy. And now we've got this war raging in Ukraine with the Russians, which isn't really anything to do with Ukraine. It's two different systems fighting. It's a mixed economy system where the government owns and controls the infrastructure and runs it pretty much at cost for the public. Okay, so there are a few exceptions to that, but basically it's infrastructure government. You know, the government makes sure the railways run, the water runs. And in the West now, we've just got rampant finance capitalism where the political parties, the press, the infrastructure has all been up for sale and to the highest bidder, and sometimes actually sold off at a loss and through all sorts of insider deals and dodgy fraud. You know, so that's really what's going on in Ukraine, I think, and this is pointed out by Michael Hudson, that you've got a mixed economy on the East versus Europe's finance capitalists. And so I think, you know, that it was putting this all in context is what I'm trying to do, and trying to show that the politicians really now are owned, utterly owned in the West. There's very, very few, if any. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn was one that started to sort of emerge, but he was a bit of a bumbler and he didn't realise that he was he needed to be a shark to survive in the shark's pond. So, he was kind of gobbled up, but there are very, very few around, certainly in the West. I think, you know, Erdogan has shown he can survive a coup. He's also shown, I think, looks like this week, that he can probably win the election to keep his country independent from NATO. But they are doing everything they can, of course, particularly with the Interlink nuclear weapons and the air base, the American air base in Turkey. There is a lot of pressure on Turkey to just simply join the security structure of the West, the politics, the money of the West. So, yeah, they will be trying something on, no doubt, like Nord Stream, maybe more. But they definitely want this war to continue, because all the time the war in Ukraine is continuing, they're able to supply more weapons, bigger weapons, longer range weapons. So then the Russians have to draw another line further into Ukraine and move forward. So they have created the perfect, in their view, springboard for a third world war in Ukraine, and that's absolutely what they're hell-bent on.
Someone like Jeremy Corbyn, he was starting to become a favourite of the people, is that correct? So but he was kind of alone in calling out some of this stuff. So you're never going to survive unless you have a movement behind you
against this sort of power.
I mean, to a certain extent, he did. I mean, he had a political party behind him. He had a massive political movement behind him. When he turned up, it was like a rock star here in Bristol. You know, thousands of people came out to see him. His political rivals, if they were to turn out like that, you'd get maybe a handful. You know, so of loyal robot soldiers. No, he did have a very big political movement, but he just didn't have the nous to crush his most vociferous political critics, including people who were openly saying they were doing their best to undermine him within his own party. Of course, he should have expelled them immediately. You can't allow that sort of thing to be going on. But he was just too nice a guy. He wasn't really fitted for leadership, you know, except in some kind of heavenly context where you can do that kind of thing and sort of hold hands and do kumbaya with people who are saying that they're your enemy. So he wasn't really up to the job, to be honest. And after the Brexit vote, even though his instinct was with Tony Benn and people like that to be anti-EU, the boss's club, he compromised that and said, oh, well, maybe we'll have a second referendum, which lost him millions of votes from the Labour side. Who then voted for the Tories. This is now mostly in the north of England, the Tory red wall seats up there. He also failed to deal with all these accusations, false and fake accusations of anti-Semitism. He didn't really deal with those people because he should have gotten rid of some of these Jewish individuals who were throwing these fake accusations around, like Margaret Hodge in London, the MP. She should have been kicked out of the party for making fake allegations about him being anti-Semitic. I mean, how can you have somebody who's just throwing mud around at you? And I think he was just afraid of the Jewish issue. He didn't necessarily maybe understand it very well. Of course, the reason they were doing that was nothing to do with him being anti-Semitic. It was because he was supporting the Palestinians, quite rightly. And so he wasn't up to the job, unfortunately. He was the rock star that couldn't quite get that final, you know, chord in the riff or, you know, hit the right notes. So he managed to pull the crowds in. But, it wasn't entirely his fault, but he needed to be a bit of a stronger, more single-minded character in order to. And also, I don't think he really understood human nature. He didn't understand the extent to which it was a kind of battle between good and evil rather than, his mission was to defeat the dark forces and the evil ones rather than to just sort of get everyone in the Labour Party sitting around singing Kumbaya.
And now we're in this situation where the Nord Stream pipeline was blown up the day after Bilderberg 2022 is completed.
Well, it wasn't quite the day. No, it was the operation where the mines were planted at began the day Bilderberg finished last year. So it would have been a few days afterwards. That's Cy Hirsch has revealed that. And I don't think the Bilderbergers would be too happy. They don't want people to realize that these are the sorts of people that are there. And of course, that's why they have to meet face to face. They couldn't do it on Zoom because they're plotting and planning criminal acts that could lead to the deaths of millions of people and all to sort of further their own aims. And one has to wonder what exactly they are. I think you have to look at this letter from Albert Pike back in 1871 to see the long-term geopolitical plan. First of all, to create the State of Israel, to get the Ottomans out of the way, to get to the Zionist state formed, which the Rockefellers, particularly Nelson Rockefeller, was very instrumental in, as John Loftus talks about in his book, The Secret War on the Jews. In fact, I'm not even sure if it's in his book. He did tell me in an interview about it. But, then you've got the plan is the war in the Middle East, but a bigger war between China and America. Basically, the same cults, you know, the triads or Masons controlling both China and America. The Russians sort of standing on the sidelines, which is why they don't want them standing on the sidelines, which is why they're being attacked now. And the debacle in the Middle East mainly between the Iranians and Israelis. So the idea is to create this massive religious war that turns into a global Third World War. Just look at Albert Pike and his letter. This is really what he's talking about. And the idea is to create this religious, in big inverted commas, war that turns everybody off of religion. And then, of course, you get a kind of atheism. And if, to fill that gap, the Luciferian religion comes along. That was Albert Pike's plan, and it does certainly seem to be what's unfolding before our eyes.
What's the best way to understand the Jewish part in this? Because you hear, you know, it's the Jews, and then, as you say, the Nazis took some of the wealth that was stolen from Europe and went to South America, and then Jewish was set up as leaders of some of these companies to throw the scent off. So it's a different, the Jews who are running, you can't even say that word, can you, that are running this, the most powerful companies in the world, they're not the ones who were the victims of the Holocaust. They're not saying, not the same religion. Is that correct?
No, well, look, okay. So I think that, well, there are subtle differences. Obviously, there are many Jews who are Zionists identify with the suffering under the Nazis, but really Hitler's mission, just as the anti-Islamic people today, is to eliminate with the Jews, it was the European rabbinic tradition. The idea of these kind of learned people that knew what was going on, that had been there since the dawn of time and understood right from wrong, the origins of humanity, the destiny of humanity, those are the ones they wanted to wipe out, because the many of the Jews we have today, of course, are secular Jews, which is a bizarre concept, really. And they're not even Middle Eastern, are they? I mean, you know, look at the European Jews, for example. I mean, obviously, there were many that converted who are Europeans. Creating a Jewish homeland is a bit of a misnomer when the people who are coming there are obviously not from that part of the world. So I think the best way of understanding it, it's a really good question, but the best way to understand it is many Jews are into this idea. I mean, this is an Old Testament idea, not a New Testament idea, of going back to the land that God gave them. Fine. But then you get Neturi Carter and other Jewish organizations, Orthodox, who say, no, you know, this is the wrong thing to do. This isn't what God is telling us to do. It's not what the Bible's saying at all. It's saying that we should be dispersed. We should just continue as a diaspora. So, you know, there's lots of contention there. But then when things really start kicking off in the Middle East, many of those Jews are going to start thinking, well, many of them already are. What are we doing here? It's almost like a trap. And at which point, as we've seen ever since the beginning of 2023, we've seen many, many Jews coming out on the streets complaining that their prime minister is a dictator, and they don't want a dictator for a prime minister. They want a learned rabbi or somebody like that. And actually, what they've got in Netanyahu again, and many of the other leaders, including people who are even more extreme than him, is a bunch of either fanatics or actually terrorists, people that worked in the special forces in Israel. So they haven't got the learned type. So this, I think, is going to cause an enormous cataclysm in Israel, you know, between the people who've come there thinking what they're doing is doing the right thing and that they do have some biblical belief. Of course, many, many don't. And they've created this kind of racist state now. So, many of the people who would have been kicking off right now against what's going on in Israel are dead, of course, died in concentration camps, died in labor camps. That was all quite deliberate, to try and replace the Jews of Europe with a kind of Zionist fake version. And, of course, many of them aren't even really in any way religious at all. So, you know, you've seen a similar thing with Islam, with the creation of things like al-Nusra Front, al-Qaeda, with these madrasas where people have been being taught a very extreme fake version of Islam. And probably, you know, with the Christian Zionists, you could say a similar thing about them. There's been an attempt to sort of seed, with lots of money involved, fake versions of these religions to get, you know, real hatred going between them in order to create this kind of Third World War cataclysm. The other thing, important thing to say about all that, is Tim Cohen's book, The Antichrist and a Cup of Tea, does identify Prince Charles as, well, now King Charles, obviously, as someone who will play a role as a peacemaker in a future war because of his connections with the Davidic line in Judaism and particularly with the Hashemic, I think it is, line in Islam, to sort of be the person that steps forward and says, let's have peace, where, of course, this is, you know, this is a war of partly of his creation in the first place. So that's exactly the sort of Antichrist figure that we might expect to see in the future.
I listened to that interview you did, The Antichrist and a Cup of Tea, and it was just fascinating and mind-boggling at the same time.
Well, I think, you know, we've got to start looking at, I mean, there is some contention about the Book of Revelation. Obviously, a lot of Muslims think it's kind of a plan against them, you know, but actually what I think it's really doing is speaking to God's people now, saying, well, if and when these events take place, well, not if, but when these events take place, look at the four horsemen of the apocalypse, you will understand what's going on. The first four of the seven seals in Revelation, you got the white horse, the red horse, the black horse, the pale horse. So, you know, the white one is some kind of figure, apparently. I mean, it's difficult to know, isn't it? But the red horse is definitely a really kind of serious war breaks out. The black horse is financial system collapses, so people can't, you know, haven't got any money to buy food. So good idea to go and get yourself some land and start growing some food, folks. And the final one is disease. So, you know, try not to get try and make sure your immune system is, you know, toughened up. So, you know, that's the idea, is that when these things start to unfold, that people will know what's going on. At least people in the know will know, or people have ever read their Bible will know. I mean, you know, I think ultimately it's ultimately satanic, the Bilderberg thing, just as Freemason is. And I think it's important also to look at the origins of China as it now is, communist China. There's a sort of similar thing that's happened to Russia in the Russian Revolution, in this, a lot of this was U.S., is it Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, Anthony Sutton's book? And look at what happened with Mao in China. That was it between the wars. This is funded by Yale University. Had a whole faculty, well, not a faculty, but a whole group of at Yale. It was called Yale in China. Was funding Mao's bookshops, making sure that his little communist letters went all over the place. So they created that revolution, I think, and they're now in control. Another important figure is, I think anyway, is the, apart from Yuval Noah Harari and this kind of philosophy of accelerationism, is this guy I went to school with years ago, Nick Land. I mean, he was a really nice bloke, actually, you know, good mate. He was great fun to hang out with, very knowledgeable, dark sense of humour, typical, like, you know, 14-year-old school kids. And he's now over in Shanghai, the financial centre in China. And his philosophy, he's basically the father of accelerationism, the idea of getting all these crises going. But it's quite obvious, if you look at what's happened with COVID, if you look at what's happened with Ukraine, if you look at what's happened with the migrant crisis, if you look at what's happened with the economy, the so-called solutions which are being decided, you know, not by anybody we've ever elected, are all making things worse. And this is Nick's idea. You know, this is, well, I say it's only his idea, but, you know, he's accelerationism is creating a sort of multi-crisis in order to precipitate the destruction of society. So the only person I can see who's done a really good critique of all of this is Kees van der Peel, and his book, which is recently out, whose name escapes me. I'm not sure if you can remember. States of Emergency, that's right. Mm. And he's explaining that, well, they know they're taking over and they know we're going to be pissed off about it, so they're going to make sure they control the opposition to them. So anyway, that's, in a nutshell, I think a sort of pre-Bilderberg chit-chat. If you've got one last question, I've just about got time if you want.
So you have a list, or you have a list coming of the guest list of this Bilderberg group, but one thing I find,
I'll put it up there, yeah.
One thing I find fascinating is how obvious something like the Nord Stream pipeline is, but yet we have and people are starting to talk about these groups like Bilderberg and the World Economic Forum and the Club of Rome, and an awareness is growing. And then we're seeing too big to fail banks continuously closing in on everything and everything being further centralized. And then Harari talking about the hacking of the human brain. And so the awareness is growing and the obviousness of things like the Nord Stream pipeline are happening. But then the media is just the only thing they have now is, oh, that's crazy. And even Cy Hirsch is now sidelined as one of the best journalists in history, and he's a crackhead now because he states the obvious. I just don't know where we go from here.
Hang on, because look, as Manfred Petrich would say, were he sitting with us still, and I would seriously suggest you track down, I mean, on Radio 4 or et cetera, some of the old interviews I've done with him before he died, he'd say, that is for the stupid people. And, I mean, we've got this sort of underclass that's been forced by the press. Actually, quite a lot of people don't really believe it anymore. They know not to believe it. The purpose of the press, which is lying the whole time, is to just disengage people from everything that's going on. And so these people hopefully can get away with whatever it is they want to do by lying and lying. Mm. And there's many, many people now, I think, are watching what they see and thinking, well, this doesn't really make sense. It's getting quite fragile, their grip on people's hearts and minds anyway. So there are plenty of people that understand something quite a lot bigger is going on and don't trust that mass media anymore. In fact, don't even watch it, particularly the young people. And I think I remember this is just during the whole COVID thing, having a conversation with a young lad just got off this bus from school. And I said, what do you think's going on? He said, well, it's just a game, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people can see that we are being played, and there are various ways to do it through your job, you know, through your house, your rent, your interest rates. I mean, this is amazing that they're putting up interest rates and saying, oh, we're trying to do it to bring down inflation. No, you're not. You're doing it to increase everybody's overheads so that the economy is going to collapse. People can't pay their bills. It's going to cause even more inflation. You know, you've got unlimited profits for the oil companies, which is also causing enormous inflation on moving goods and services around, you know. So everything that's being told to us pretty much now is, you know, the analysis anyway of what's going on is a lie. And so that's, I think, not working. It's not going to work. It doesn't work, particularly with the older people who've seen a few things in their lifetimes and the younger people who just know it's rubbish. And so they're getting increasingly desperate. Ultimately, you know, there's going to be a reckoning. And I think let's maybe just wind up with this thought, is that these maniacs are ultimately satanic group in the West, in the NATO countries, what they've decided to do is take on both the Russians and their own people at the same time. And that's the arrogance that they've there's no way they can win. No way. So if they have to deal with one before they can deal with the other. So they're on a hiding to nothing, Paul. And that you know, it's going to get worse, it's going to get difficult, it's going to get hellish, but at the end of the day, the truth will win. It's impossible for it not to, because they have delusions about their own abilities. I mean, look at the seven countries in 5 years and all that stuff. No, it's not going to happen. So it seems to me these people have got this kind of death trip, death wish. In fact, there's a very good article about Nick Land and his accelerationism and the death trip. I'm not quite sure who wrote it, but I was reading that the other day thinking, yeah, and of course Nick was into acid. I mean, wouldn't say that I didn't go anywhere near the stuff at all, but, you know, this is back in the 1970s. But so we've got to, I think, understand that something pretty serious is going to happen, but that, you know, put your arms around your kids and explain to them It's actually really about good and evil, and it's about, you know, the spiritual health of mankind, and it's probably a good idea to go and visit your local church and make friends and make contact with people of a like mind, because things are only going to get rougher and tougher over the next few years, and the Bilderbergers are going to make sure of that.
Thanks so much, Tony, for giving me your time at 1 a.m. in the morning over there in Portugal.
Well, that's why I think it's an important place to go to and comment on and do a little bit of, you know, find out what we can from the hotel staff, whatever, that sort of thing, in order to tell the world what these guys are up to. Because they're, you know, the Russians have just decided, well, that we can't deal with them anymore. We've now got the ability to beat them in a war, so why should we even bother to you make a deal with them, the Minsk agreement, and what do? They just use it to buy time, and then they carry on killing people and they break the agreement. This agreement was guaranteed by the Germans and the French, and yet it was never ever honored. So how can the Russians make deals with people like that? They've got to the point where they're thinking, well, there's no point in dealing with these guys, we're going to have to fight them. And of course, that's what I'm afraid the Russians, I think, should actually make a bit more of an effort to put out peace feelers. But it's up to them, and they've just decided, well, look, we're not getting anywhere with the peace, so we're going to have to fight them. I really admire Lavrov, actually. I think he's one of the world's greatest ever chess players. But anyway, you can follow my stuff at Bilderberg.org. You can download my book all about Bormann and the Fourth Reich and the Bilderberg origins. There and pick up the radio show Fridays at 5 at thisweek.org.uk. The stream is talkradio.org.uk, and hopefully stay informed. All right, Paul.
Thanks a lot, Tony, and I'll include all those in the show notes so people can follow your reports from Bilderberg.
God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down.
Thank you. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the podcast. And as you remember, Tony is a massive wealth of knowledge. So thanks again for this little impromptu podcast. It was 1 a.m. where he was when we recorded this. So I can't believe he has that sort of a memory for names and historical events that he can remember that at 1 o'clock in the morning. So thanks again. And please check out his website, bilderberg.org, where you can find some of his writings, his books, and get a bit of a gist of what's going on, because it's really important that we inform ourselves and at least have an awareness of what's happening so that possibly we can have a jump on what they have in store for us. So thanks for listening. Don't forget to download the Fair Food Forager app. It's also here to help you find ethical and sustainable food, and food that is organic, local, supporting small businesses, reduced plastic packaging, anything really to help support you and the planet. And you can share good news stories, learn from each other, and just feel good for a change about the future and what we can do to help each other and the planet. If you enjoyed this podcast and you'd like to hear more, please subscribe where you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review it, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, and share it with your friends. Thanks again to Ash Grunwald. This song is River from the album Now. Until next time, bye. We live together.